You are listening to Stateside. I'm Lester Graham. When you think about the streams and rivers that flow into the Great Lakes, you probably think of those larger rivers. But recent research has been looking into the effects of smaller tributaries, the kind that are small enough you can jump from one bank to the other. Amy Marcarelli is an associate professor of biological sciences at Michigan Technological University and one of the authors of a paper published in the Journal of the American Water Resources Association. I was reading about your research into streams around Lake Superior in Great Lakes Echo. What made you think of studying the smallest streams?
Yeah, so before I came to the Great Lakes region, I started at Michigan Tech about 10 years ago. I was studying stream-lake interactions in mountain watersheds in the Rocky Mountains. And in those systems, we know that the streams and lakes can have really important interactive effects on each other. So when I came here, I immediately started to think about what effect all of the streams could have on big lakes like Lake Superior or the Great Lakes in general. And the answer that I got back from many of the people who I was working with was, well, they're not that important because the watersheds are so small. So the Great Lakes are really unique among lakes in that they have a watershed area to lake area ratio of about 1.5 to 2, depending on which lake. Most lakes have ratios that are 6 or bigger. So there's a lot more possibility for the watersheds and the streams that drain those watersheds to affect the lakes.
Yeah, I was looking at some of this research, and because of the sheer area of Lake Superior, rain on the lake contributes about half the water each year. Then the tributaries and the rivers, they supply the other half of water flowing into the lake. So do we know how many streams and rivers we're talking about emptying into Lake Superior?
Well, we didn't before we started to do this analysis. So we have monitored maybe the 10 largest rivers around Lake Superior in Canada and the U.S. But the question of how many small streams there are is one that we really didn't know before we started to try to pull this data together. And in our analysis, we included hydrologic data from Canada and the U.S., and found that there are about 2,800 streams that drain directly into Lake Superior.
That's a lot.
It's a lot.
They do add up after a while, even though it might be a small watershed.
Exactly. And, you know, those 10 biggest tributaries make up about half of the watershed area. But the other half of the watershed area is made up of those other, you know, very small streams. And the smallest streams, the ones that are maybe 5 kilometer square or smaller drainages, there are 1,200 of those. So you end up with many, many small streams all feeding directly into Lake Superior that may be feeding at different times or different composition of materials, different amounts than you see from those big rivers that we really haven't accounted for.
You've been studying the plumes that the streams wash into the lake using an underwater vehicle, drones. What are you learning about those plumes?
Yeah, the interesting thing is that we think of streams sort of putting water in and then they sort of end, right, at where the stream comes into the lake and then the water becomes this well-mixed lake water. But in reality, when the water comes in to the lake, it's a different temperature and has different water chemistry, and it sort of stays as its own little water body for a while before it gets mixed into Lake Superior. And how quickly it will get mixed depends on the time of the year and the currents along that area of the shoreline. And we've been interested in if we can actually go out and detect those plumes and try to see how big they are and use that as a way to estimate the amount of water and the chemistry of that water and how quickly those get mixed into the lake body to try to quantify some of these smaller streams. The real hard part, though, is when the largest inputs are happening, it's when either during snowmelt around Lake Superior, which happens when it's hard to get onto the lake, or during really big storm events, which may happen very quickly and catastrophically. So we've been really interested in if we can use deployable technology or autonomous technology to try to measure and characterize when the material is coming in during these times of the year when maybe we can't get out on Lake Superior.
I want to talk about some of those storms you were mentioning, but I want to ask you to do something, some basic science, explain it for us. Take us to the process, because you begin with these streams that wash some nutrients into the lake that contributes
some
to the food web at the bottom. Explain how that all works.
Sure, yeah. So one of the nutrients that's most important coming out of these streams is phosphorus. Phosphorus is a nutrient that's limiting to the growth of plants and algae and bacteria. When you want to, you know, make your garden green, you may add phosphorus and also nitrogen. And these streams deliver nitrogen. They deliver it in these pulses. And when that phosphorus comes out into the near shore of Lake Superior, it then will be taken up by the algae, which then are eaten by the zooplankton, which then get eaten by the small fish, which then get eaten by the big fish. And some recent work published, not by our group, but by others in Green Bay, shows that that phosphorus that comes out in those river plumes may be taken up really quickly by the algae that live right there. So there may be really localized inputs of nutrients that lead to these little pockets of area where there's lots of food that then can feed the whole food web.
Are these streams generally pristine, or are there problems like soil erosion and siltation like we see elsewhere?
Yeah, in Lake Superior, for the most part, the streams are in pretty good condition. We don't think of them as being big sources of excess nutrients like we might, you know, around Green Bay or Saginaw Bay or in Lake Erie.
Yeah, the western end of Lake Erie, yeah.
Yeah, Lake Erie is probably where we know the most about tributaries because of the harmful algal blooms. What's interesting here up in Lake Superior is that we are finding suggestions that these localized inputs of phosphorus, in particular phosphorus that's bound to sediment, which we've been seeing an increase in sediment inputs in the recent years in association with some of the really big flooding events that have happened between Duluth and Marquette, Michigan, really. Those have led to watershed erosion, which puts in lots of sediment. That sediment has phosphorus bound to it, and when that phosphorus goes out into the near shore of the lake, it may settle, but then release the phosphorus later in the year. And we think that that may be leading to nearshore cyanobacterial blooms that have been observed around the Bayfield and Ashland, Wisconsin area just this past summer. And folks at University of Minnesota Duluth are starting to really ramp up to look at those inputs and effects on cyanobacteria along these shorelines of Lake Superior that we think of as pristine and where we haven't had a lot of cyanobacteria issues in the past.
Just to tell folks, cyanobacterial blooms can produce the toxin microcystins like we've seen in the western end of Lake Erie. So it can be toxic to people.
Exactly. Microcystin, and then there's a whole suite of other toxins as well. This cyanobacteria that we've been seeing in Lake Superior is not microcystins, so it won't produce microcystins specifically, but it may produce other toxins that could be harmful to health.
So you've been assessing these streams, you've been looking at the plumes, their contribution to the lake. What's next in your research of these small streams around Lake Superior?
Yeah, we'd really like to scale up. So most of our measurements so far have been in streams in the immediate area here around Michigan Tech and in Houghton, sort of from some of the tributaries over by Marquette to the Ontonagon River to our west. And we have an idea of the different signals that we might be able to detect that may be most important for measuring plumes. And one of the things that has been really sensitive and different between streams and the near shore of Lake Superior is dissolved organic carbon, which is that material that's naturally produced from soils and wetlands in our area and in other areas that then gets transported into the streams and makes them look stained. So it's that dark color that you may associate with.
I'm thinking of Tequamen Falls is what I'm thinking of.
Exactly. Yeah. Tequamen Falls is that brownish color because of the dissolved organic carbon. And what we've found is that in the streams that we've studied, the dissolved organic carbon seems to have a distinct structure that we can measure in the lab. And so we're interested in seeing if that distinct structure is similar and if we can detect that in plumes out into Lake Superior across the broader area. And then we can also use that color to see where the plumes are mixing in just by using cameras mounted on drones that we fly overhead. So we're interested in combining the underwater measurements with more drone imagery that we can use to map plumes and see how they change through time. So our goal for this year is to continue to test those autonomous technologies to see how good of a job we can do at sort of measuring the 3D characteristics of a plume, both how big they are on the surface and how deep they go in the water, and then to try to go to other places to see if we can use the same tools to do a broader scale estimation. And I think the long term, you know, maybe 10 years from now, I'd really like to be able to say, here is the actual input cumulatively from all of these tributaries into Lake Superior, and here's how we think it varies depending on time of year or with these really big floods that we're seeing maybe become a more regular part of the hydrology here in this region.
Because of climate change, right, yeah.
Because of climate change, yeah. One of the effects of climate change that we think is going to happen are more frequent severe storms.
We've been speaking with Michigan Tech's Amy Marcarelli. She was the co-author of a paper published in the Journal of the American Water Resources Association about the contributions of small streams to Lake Superior. Thanks for talking with us.
Yeah, I'm really glad to be here. Thanks for having me.